Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. I'm glad Joan Pryde's here, too, because otherwise I wouldn't cover the Kiplinger letter nearly as well as she will when she joins us, which is about right now. Joan Pryde, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Jim. Good morning.
It's good to have you back. How do you?
Thank you.
What's the news in the big city, in our nation's capital? Anything new going
on? Well, they've all left town.
They have.
Congress is gone.
Right.
Everybody's gone. It's nice and quiet.
I knew that I woke up this morning with a good feeling. With a calmness. There was an odd calmness, and I couldn't put my finger on why it was. And now I realize that they're now that Congress has left for the summer, I feel a little safer.
Well, I have bad news for you. They haven't left for the summer yet. They don't do that until August.
But that's right. That's just the fourth thing.
Yeah. They take a week off. You know, whenever there's a federal holiday and we get a day. And small business owners get nothing, they get a week.
That's right. We get nothing. Absolutely.
But something did happen here yesterday.
Yeah, what happened?
Well, I guess he thought he would wait till Congress got out of town, but Mr. Greenspan took action yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
Really wasn't just Mr. Greenspan. It was the whole Fed.
Right, the whole Fed. That was
raising interest rates about a quarter of a point.
Yep.
And the remark in the Wall Street Journal was the markets reacted. They said it was like getting a tie on Father's Day. That's how, I mean, they had telegraphed their intentions so well that everybody expected this.
Well,
so that
the markets didn't
freak out.
Don't forget, Joan, the markets knew that I predicted in January that the Fed would raise rates a quarter of a point in June.
Oh, that's why they didn't freak out.
If you remember that. Now, I have
I have
the documentation to prove this.
There we go.
I telegraphed it before Greenspan did. And, I'm sure if he could see me, he'd give me a high five. I'm sure he'd.
Are we going to spend the next hour talking about this?
You brought this up. I didn't.
I know.
I'm sorry. But we are going to talk about that in just a minute. I'm glad you brought that up. But another thing that happened this week, this very significant, Joan, and this happened yesterday, and that is that the Iraqi embassy opened up again in the United States.
Oh, that's right. The new ambassador presented his credentials to the Iraqi government.
Was it his credentials or her credentials?
No, I think it was Mr. Negroponte.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. You're talking about the U.S. ambassador to Iraq. I'm talking about the Iraqi embassy in the United States. Work with me here, Joan. The Iraqi embassy in the United States opened in D.C. yesterday, and the ambassador is a lady.
Oh, wow.
Right. How about that?
There's something ironic about that, given that that's a very, traditional Islamic state.
Except that Iraq is a little bit more liberal about those things than some of the other countries are.
In certain cities that are ruled by imams, I'm just reading in the New Yorker, there are some pretty tough rules on women, like no makeup, no hairdressers, things like that.
Right. Yeah. Saves the guys a lot of money, but it's not good for the ladies. But the lady is very well spoken, and I wish I could say her name, and I really feel badly because I did know it at one time. I've just forgotten it. But she really has spoken. I've heard her this week, and she really is well spoken, smart lady. But just think about that, Joan. I mean, it's been since 90, I think, that embassy has been closed.
Well, this happened yesterday?
Yes.
Well, maybe I'm going to try to find it at the break.
They opened the embassy and had a big soiree there, and it was pretty cool. It's a good thing. A birth of another nation, ladies and gentlemen. That's what we're seeing right now. And we're actually getting to watch it on television. And some of it's ugly, though, Joan, isn't it?
No question about that.
But some of it's beautiful. You know, Joan, I like to remind people that from the day of the signing of the Declaration of Independence to the first Constitutional Congress was 13 years. Until we had a ratified constitution, it was about 15 years. Think about that. And 70 years later, President Lincoln was still calling it an experiment.
Interesting.
So, you know, I think we need to be careful being too impatient with the Iraqis.
Well, I guess what worries me is the continuing threat of violence and the concern I would have for any civilians over there.
Well, there's no question about it. Now, they stay, it's a dangerous place. I agree with you. I said it, there's some ugly things, but you know what, Joan? Sometimes that's what it takes to create something of value. Let's go back. Go ahead.
I think we would have had fewer problems if we'd been better prepared before we went over there.
I think you're probably right. But I wouldn't disagree with that, except I will ask you this question. Who could have known how to have done something? I mean, this is one of those things that nobody's really done before.
Well, apparently people did know, and were trying to tell the Bush administration who may not have been listening.
Right. Well, I give you that a lot of that's true, but some of it is also Monday morning quarterbacking. They're both elements there. Both of it is information that could have been known that wasn't heeded, and some of it is Monday morning quarterbacking.
And
it's probably about as much of one as the other. Let's move over and talk about the economy. You say that the economy is getting into a groove, Joan.
Well, we seem to think so. Well, we actually say it's finding its sweet spot.
Yeah. That's your language? Did you come up with that, Joan?
No, I think this should be a family newsletter.
On track for a 4.5% growth in 2004.
Which, I'll take it. That's not bad.
Well, actually, that's a little below my prediction. You know, my prediction is 5%.
Oh, here we go.
I still stick by that. Midway through the year, I'm still sticking by my numbers, Joan.
Well, things look pretty good right now. All the numbers are good.
Yeah, and consumer confidence is up. And but now the interest rates, you mentioned that. The Fed raised rates a quarter of a point to a Fed funds rate of 1.25, and that would make prime 4.25, which means for small business owners, we're going to borrow money at 6 and 7.25%. That's Fed prime plus is what we typically have to borrow money at. But still, even at that rate, we can handle it. And but you guys say that the rate increases are necessary. Tell us why.
Well, you don't want the economy overheated to bring inflation back, and this is the sort of the tough dance that the Fed has to perform now. On the one hand, they don't want to stifle the economy by raising rates too fast and too high, but on the other hand, they can't let inflation creep back in because that will ruin the recovery too.
Right. Exactly.
Because if inflation overheats, then the Fed has to come in with a sledgehammer.
Right.
And then you really go much closer toward a recession.
In aviation, we call that a porpoising effect, where the plane makes violent gyrations up and down, and that's what we don't want. We don't want the porpoising. We want the small, tiny, tiny corrections as they need to be made. And I think that's what they're doing right now. 20 after, we're going to be right back with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editor. Stay with us.
Your skin so brown. And I want to sleep.
We're back. It's 23 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. My website is www.jbsba.com or jimblassingame.com or smallbusinessadvocate.com. If you like to type, we have a long one for you. If you don't like to type, the short one is jbsba.com. And when you get there, don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter. It comes on Sunday. We're now in our fifth year. And by the way, the lead article in this week's newsletter is going to be my "We Began with Freedom" piece, the one that I run every year on 4th of July, the 4th of July edition, and I get a lot of wonderful comments from you guys thanking me for that piece. You like it a lot, and those of you who have read it, I thank you for that feedback, and that's the reason I run it every year, and I'm kind of fond of that piece too. So if you subscribe this week, if you're not already a subscriber, that's what you'll be getting coming up in the week ahead. Joan Pride is with us. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, we were talking about inflation, and one of the things.
Well, I had a question for you.
Oh, okay. All right, that's right. You want to ask me a question?
Well, just spoke before the break about the Fed raising interest rates a quarter of a point, which, as you pointed out numerous times recently, you were correct about.
Right.
Now, what's your prediction for the rest of the year?
Okay, I predicted, and I'm going to go back and say what I said in the beginning, and that is that they would raise rates, right as they did this week, and that they would not do it the rest of the year.
Right, that's what I remember.
Which is contrary. Which is contrary to what Kiplinger. No, I'm going to stick by that.
You are, okay.
I'm going to stick by that because
it's your show. You have the right to do that.
Well, I could have the right to do that if it weren't my show. But the thing is that I have to admit that that's I feel a little shakier about that prediction than I was
you
about
do.
The first one.
Oh,
I knew that I was right about this one.
Uh-huh.
I believe that as strongly as I believed anything, that they wouldn't raise rates until they did. But I'm a little bit shakier about the what they do from now on. But the next raise, the next opportunity, I should say, which they won't do anything out of the cycle. It'll always be at an FOMC meeting if they do anything. The next one is the 1st of August. And they got only two more before the election. And even though I have people on earlier this week who've done research to show that the Fed's activities have never been political, at least not in a long, long time, in terms politically motivated one way or the other, I still think that they don't want the impression that there is anything political.
Right. Oh, so, I can't imagine that they would. That's right.
And let me say this. Unless the second quarter turns out to be like third quarter last year, where it was 8% or something like that growth.
Torrid.
Yeah, torrid. Exactly. That's a good way to say it. I don't see that. I don't see them doing it again. They don't need to. But if they do, if I am wrong, because let me say it this way, this will make you feel better. If I am wrong in my prediction, it will be no more than 0.25 point, and that will be all before the election.
And then what about after the election?
Oh, now that's all bets are off after that.
Well, now, you said they weren't going to do anything for the rest of the year.
Okay, well, there's only one meeting.
Let's wrap this up.
There's only one meeting in December.
December 31st.
There's only one meeting in December.
And okay.
I said until after the election. I think my prediction was that they wouldn't do anything until after the election.
Hmm.
Not for the rest of the year.
Wish I had written that down.
I have it written down. It actually is written.
I thought it was through the year.
In fact, we'll find that. I'll find that out.
Okay,
well, I want to get back to good inflation, though. You guys talk about good inflation. Tell us what that means.
Well, we say demand-led price growth, and that's good because what we're talking about is pricing power for businesses, which they haven't had for a long time.
Right, right. Well, and that's as opposed to stagflation.
Boy, good I remember that. I was a tiny infant, but I remember that.
Yeah, and you can remind us what stagflation is, since you remember.
Well, it was this horrible upward spiral where price increases were causing the economy to stagnate further. You know, normally you equate roaring inflation with an overheated economy that's going too fast.
Right.
But we had the opposite effect. We had overheated inflation and an underperforming economy, and each one fueled the other and made things worse.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, I'm sure the classical economists were scratching their heads at that time because you would think if the economy is tanking, that means that there is no pricing power
right.
and you can't keep things on going on the way they were.
Right.
But there were a lot of other factors, and I think most notably the oil crisis of the 70s.
Right, which I hope we're not about to get into another one of those. But you know, with regard to interest rates, I think the marketplace understands that the Fed not only needs to get some ammunition back, some deflation fighting ammunition, some bad news ammunition, because I mean, what if, for example, you know, what if something happened that we were attacked again or whatever, and there had to be some stimulus to get the ball rolling again? They need to reload a little bit. We've been saying that a long time, but I think the marketplace realizes this, and businesses realize this, and customers realize.
But they do. There was a reason to go up a quarter point. They're not going to reload just for the sake of reloading.
You're right.
Then they
run
the risk of hurting the economy.
They're exactly right. No, the reloading was just a benefit that they got from this. But the interest rates went up because the economy is getting better, and this is just a little bitty, tiny little tweak of an adjustment.
Right.
To sort of keep it on an even keel. It's like using my aviation example again. It's like when you're flying on instruments, you make little tiny adjustments, but you make lots of them. But not in 2004. 29 after, we'll be right back with Joan Pryde, senior editor, with the Kiplinger editor. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Danger, lose you.
Named to Talkers Magazine's Heavy 100 for the second year in a row.
We tell you over and over again that you're wonderful, and you just don't get it. What's wrong with you?
Congratulations, Jim Blassingame, our small business advocate.
We're back, 34 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, or as Joan Pride likes to call me, Mr. Wonderful. Right, Joan?
Hello? I'm having
Joan
trouble
Pride.
With my connection.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor, the lovely and talented and often acerbic Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And they got a website, folks, that I think you need to know about, because if you haven't checked it out lately, I think you'll like it. It's called Kiplinger.com, K-I-P-L-I-N-G-E-R. And they have publications that they like it if you subscribe to, but you can actually use their website. A lot of the information that they have, you can get there on the website for free. But then I think what'll happen, be careful, because I think what'll happen is you'll get a little bit addicted and you'll want their publications. And so, which includes the Kiplinger Letter, which has been around now almost 81 years. That's the weekly publication. Then they got three biweeklies, the Tax Letter, the Agriculture Letter, and the California Letter. And then there's a monthly magazine that used to be called Changing Times, but now, Joan, it's called
Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
Yeah, you can get a lot of good stuff there, including like what kind of cars to buy and what colleges to send your kids to and things like that, right?
Yeah, it goes well beyond just, you know, buy stocks, buy bonds. Right. There's a lot of different things in there.
Mm-hmm. And that's every month. And of course, that's also available at newsstands. And they still got the 30-day free trial, right? The Blassingame 30-day free trial?
You bet.
And I bet there's a phone number to call, too, isn't there, Joan?
Yes, our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
And be sure, if you want to get a laugh, if you want to hear somebody have, you know, laugh, go ahead and tell them that I sent you. Joan, let's go on down a little bit further and talk about just a little bit more about the economy. The business community's confidence is rising. I'm seeing this. You're seeing this. It's a reality. Profits are up. One of the things that I'm noticing, you know, a lot of my Brain Trust members are speakers and trainers and authors, and they do that kind of work that typically companies only spend money for if they feel pretty good about themselves and about the future. And those people are really starting to go back to work. And so that's good news. The consumer confidence is up for 2 months in a row. As you say, President Bush will have something to crow about this fall, won't he?
Oh, definitely. I think so.
Jobs are up. The job deficit's being eliminated. What have we got? How many jobs have been created in the last 9 or 10 months?
Well, let's see. If it's not on this page, I have no idea.
Well, it's over. I've forgotten. It's quite a bit. It's over a million. I've forgotten the exact number, but there's a good chance.
Well, we say we lost a net 2.6 million jobs between late 2000 and mid 2003, and those
right.
are being recouped. So
right, yeah, that's it. So and that's happening pretty fast. And of course, thank God for small businesses, Joan, because we're doing most of that.
And that's right.
The primary job generator in the country. Let's move over and talk about domestic security, Joan. What's the news on the terrorism insurance issue?
Well, you might think it's a little early to be talking about that, but because the terrorism insurance law that allowed this, you know, government backstop to be set up for insurance companies doesn't expire till the end of 2005, but business groups are now saying, you know, it would be really nice if you could not wait till the last minute like a college student with a term paper,
right.
because we need the certainty that this law will continue before we enter into insurance contracts.
Tell us how that works. Can you tell us how the terrorism insurance works?
Well, if I remember correctly, it's kind of, I would liken it to a stop loss on your health insurance,
mm-hmm.
that if a terrorist attack occurred that the government deemed to fall under the purview of this law, then the insurance company would pay out a certain amount, and then beyond that, the government would kick in and pay most of whatever the claim was for anyone who has terrorism insurance.
You know, in a way, they may have, and I don't know this for sure, but it seems to me, I remember the hand-wringing of the insurance companies after 9/11, and them saying, you know, number one, how we didn't build enough into our premiums previously, and number two, how can we withstand something like this again? They almost had to do that to keep insurance rates from going through the roof.
Right. Well, it's not just that, but they were refusing to underwrite
to write them at all. Exactly. There was a number of months.
They wouldn't offer the insurance at all.
There were a number of months there where you couldn't even get liability insurance, wasn't there?
Right. And if you think about it, certain, like say, a building in New York City,
mm-hmm.
Any nuclear power plant, any sports stadium, you know, any venue where a lot of people congregate that could be liable for terrorists, you know,
right.
Airlines.
Mm-hmm. Stand by, Joan. We're going to take a quick break, folks. When we come back, we're going to talk just a little bit more about Homeland Security. There's good news for the states and cities. And then we're going to move on down and talk about your passwords and your banking. There's some news out this week on that, too. 20 tips. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
She's got it. Yeah, baby.
Sitting in the morning sun.
We're back. 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame. And we're visiting with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, one of the things, we were talking about Homeland Security a minute ago. One of the good things about that the states and the cities are going to get some help from is you guys say that next year they're going to get about $3 billion more dollars to help buy some, to help with the infrastructure, right?
That's right. We're saying things like fire trucks, communications equipment, you know, different things that can foil terrorist attacks.
Well, at least to help, it's really in recognition of who the true early responders are. I mean, these people, you know, my son, when he's not in the Marines in Iraq, he's a police officer.
Right.
And these, God bless them, firemen and police officers, emergency personnel, all these emergency personnel, the people who run toward the danger when we're running away from it, you know, they need to be prepared. They need to be trained. They need to have the right equipment and to be able to minimize the impact of a terrorist attack.
Oh, certainly.
And so this is a good thing. It's helping the states out. That's one of the, this could have been one of those unfunded mandates that could have gotten ugly across the country, couldn't it?
Yes, fortunately, it's not at all.
Yeah, exactly. Joan, let's move down and talk about technology, but we're also going, I also want to talk a little bit about banking. But you guys say this week that regular passwords, when you're doing business with people online, aren't enough to protect your data anymore. Now, tell us about that.
Well, yeah, this is interesting. We're saying better to use a new password for each access.
See, I hate that.
Which means I'm not sure how that would work.
Well, you got to have a different password. Oh, for each access. Now, they're not talking about just each account. They mean
each access.
Wow.
And
I misread that.
You would end up having to buy this little. Well, that's why you need to read the letter, you know.
Well, I did read it. I just missed that one part. That one.
You'd
word.
Have to buy a device that sort of generates the password each time.
Well, that's kind of that's interesting because you point out that they do sell for about $20, but what you do, I guess it's a what do you call it? I've forgotten the type of connection that it's called. It's just left me, but it just plugs into your computer and creates the password for you on the fly, I guess, huh?
But what if someone steals that device?
Oh.
Because that device is probably activated by you, you know, opening it up and turning it on and putting a password into it. So if someone steals that device, then they have access to, I would think, all your different accounts.
Right. We're talking about cyber. We're talking about a form of cyber terrorism, folks. It's cyber,
yeah.
cyber insecurity that you can have. They're right. And you know, Joan, this is. I don't know whether you guys, when you put this together, if you had advanced knowledge of this, but did you hear now that banks are that if you do business online with banks, that you're maybe a little more subject to getting your information stolen because of pop-ups.
Really?
That's in the news this week. Yeah, pop-ups come into your computer from different websites that you've seen. If you don't have pop-up blockers, those pop-ups can actually, when they happen, go in and find your bank data, your bank passwords that maybe you have already established and told your computer to remember. It can find those, and then they wind up stealing your money.
Ooh, yeah. So yeah. You think pop-ups are annoying but harmless, but maybe they really are.
They're
harmful.
Not so much harmless. That's exactly right. That's the reason why, Joan, that I talk, you know, as much as I can about security and about the importance of having security systems on your computers, either with one of the major companies like McAfee or Norton, and
right.
Make sure you get everything, folks. Get the firewall, the you know, spam blockers is up to you, but the firewall, the virus protection, all that stuff, you got to have that, because you're being hit every second, maybe several times a second. Believe it or not, every computer that's online, Joan, is hit like crazy all the time. It's surprising. I've heard people who do this for a living, who are in the cybersecurity business for a living, have told me that they have devices, they have programs that will show them how their computer's being pinged by people, you know, trying to get into their computer. And they said they've turned it on, and immediately it's just like rapid fire, exactly.
Wow.
So, folks, you can buy those security systems for, you know, anywhere from 30 to 50, 60 bucks a year, and it's well worth the money. Joan, let's move over and talk about business costs. Paper cost hikes will decelerate, not the prices, but the hikes will decelerate, right?
That's right.
The next 6 years?
This has been kind of a thorn in people's sides for a while.
Well, it affects you guys. I mean, you print on paper.
That's right. Not just our letters, but we are a magazine as well.
Well, exactly. And I'm in the same business. I mean, besides books, my newspaper editors, the newspapers that take my column, you know, I don't want them to have too much. I don't want their prices to go up. They might not want to pay me my column fee.
That space might get too precious. Yeah.
That's exactly right. More precious than my column is, which is hard to believe, but it's possible. But at least maybe the prices are. But you know, I'm in the process right now of printing my second book, and the prices that I'm getting from printers are they're saying, well, you know what, this price is, I didn't have this problem, you know, in the last one, but now they're saying, I don't know how long this price will hold based on how paper prices are going up.
Wow.
Also, and this is also good news, Joan, for Kiplinger, is publications are going to be able to press for ad rate hikes a little bit.
Good. I'll get a big raise.
Well, because you guys, I know you guys sell ads in your magazine, but the last 3 years have been the three worst years. One, two, and three, or oh, and one and two, have been the three worst years for ad sales since the Depression.
For magazines in general, but particularly for financial magazines, just because you had that whole run-up of stocks in the 90s.
Right.
And then the bottom fell out.
Just fell out. That's exactly right. It's been a real tough time for, as you say, especially the financial publishing industry. Quick break. Let's take a quick one, and we'll be right back with Joan Pride. It's 10 till. When we come back, we're going to talk about trade and a little bit of global politics.
It's a beautiful morning.
Back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, small business advocate. Joan Pride is our guest. And Joan, we're talking about business costs. And another thing that's going up is, you guys say that 5%, we're going to have 5% increases in average hotel prices next year. I guess I should make sure we say that. But you know, Joan, all these increases, I really think we ought to have a little bit of a philosophical attitude about that. Because if you're getting to raise your prices, and I'm getting to raise my prices a little bit, that's good for the economy. I mean, that's cash flow. That's profits. Even if I thought, you know, you probably thought you'd never hear me say this, but rising prices a little bit in a controlled way is really good for the economy. We came real close to deflation in the last couple of years, didn't we?
Yeah, that got a little scary there for a while.
Yeah. And so this is healthy.
You're saying a little inflation is a good thing?
A little bit is healthy. I mean, you're not going to.
Wow.
Well, think about it. If you have no inflation, you know, what's to the left immediately and to the right of no inflation? You know, you got either inflation or you got deflation.
That's right.
You sure don't want to get started. So we need a little bit of inflation, a little bit of pricing power. That's good for the economy. I mean, small business owners need cash flow right now. They need those profits, and they can really only get them from a little bit of pricing power, because we've wrung all the efficiencies out of the our operation that we can, and we need that pricing power. So, folks, let me say this: if your vendors are raising their prices a little bit, don't give them a hard time. You know, they probably need it a little bit, and just like you need it a little bit.
So you need just enough inflation, but not too much.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
Let's move over and talk about trade, Joan. The dollar is still kind of off against other currencies, and that's good for exporters, isn't it?
Absolutely.
For U.S. exporters.
Pardon me?
For U.S. exporters.
For U.S. exporters, which they kind of have needed. There were so many years of the strong dollar. Now with a little bit of weakness, it's very good for them, particularly in the, I would think, in the European market.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it's been rough. It's rough on those guys. And of course, they're not happy. Europe is not happy about the dollar being off against the euro because their economy is not doing so well, is it?
That's right. And they don't want a strong euro, which is kind of ironic because I think, you know, again, you assume that you want your currency to be strong because strong sounds good and weak sounds bad.
Right.
But it's a lot more complicated than that, as I have struggled to learn.
Right. Well, and as I've tried to teach you since you've been here, John. But the thing is that exactly. I mean, if you're an importer, you want a strong dollar. If you're an exporter, you want a weak dollar.
Exactly.
If you're a U.S. manufacturer, you know, then you want a weak dollar. But if you're Walmart, you want a strong dollar, so you can.
I hope everybody's taking notes because we're going to
import all that stuff. Yeah, there will be a test after this. The euro market, the eurozone as you call it, Joan, is really having a tough time right now. It's going to be less than 2% growth this year. That's even worse than Japan. And if you're worse than Japan,
boy, that's not much.
That's not saying much, is it?
Yeah.
So that's that's the reason they're so grumpy over there, Joan. I mean, think about it. The Germans and the French, they're grumpy all the time. They don't like us. People think they don't like us because of Iraq. They don't like us because we're whipping their rear ends in the marketplace. That's why they don't like us.
Well, Great Britain is looking smart these days because they wouldn't join the eurozone.
That's exactly right. Good for the good for the Brits. They're good. And of course, Ireland's doing great.
That's right.
Having a great economy. What about North Korea, Joan? Give us a little dabble of information about. You know, we keep hearing about North Korea and their nuclear program. What's going on over there?
Well, I guess that's the thing that concerns the United States, that it's still got a nuclear program and it hasn't dismantled it, and it seems to be stalling and doesn't want to. So, you know, as if we didn't have enough to do around the world, we have to worry about this and keep the heat on them.
Well, we really need the Chinese. You know, in my opinion, we need to cozy up to the Chinese on this and let the Chinese take care of North Korea.
Yeah.
The North Koreans shouldn't worry about whether the U.S. is going to come over and open up a can of Rumsfeld on them, like we did in Iraq. They need to worry that China is going to come across the border and take them.
Yeah.
And so the more China becomes a free market economy, the more North Korea is in danger. At least the current regime.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Does that make sense?
Sure. Works
so,
for me.
Joan, I'm excited about what's happening in Iraq. I pray that it continues to go well over there, and I hope that we continue to see the birth of that nation over there.
I hope so, too.
Yeah. Thank you for being here today, Joan. Good job, as always.
Thank you, Jim.
And we will see you next time.
Okay, I'll be back.
Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, ladies and gentlemen. She'll be back, and I will be, too, but right now I got to go. But before I do, let me thank my heroes, small business owners. You're the best. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. This program really is for you. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.